Well, hello and welcome to Roast Chat. Our guest tonight is Frederick Rice, a dynamic, multifaceted public speaker who brings excitement, interaction, and a lifetime of experience in horticulture, theater, and travel to audiences throughout the Northeast as well as Europe. Fred was the creator of an extensive English-style garden at his home in Manchester-by-the-Sea, Massachusetts. It was opened yearly for the Garden Conservancy and appeared in several national and international magazines, including The English Garden. When he moved to his current location in Rome, New York, he took 463 plants, including Sally's Rose, a rose he'll tell us about tonight. Now, I had the pleasure of meeting Frederick last fall at a Master Gardener event. He kept us mesmerized with his stories and his beautiful pictures. I could have listened to him all day. So sit back and relax. It's time for Rose Chat.
It's time for the Rose Chat podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey y'all, it's Chris Van Cleef. I'm the creator of Rose Chat, and for me, growing roses has become a passion. My membership in the American Rose Society has helped me to create the rose garden of my dreams right in my own backyard. I also enjoy the camaraderie and support of a network of rose growers who are eager to share, learn, and grow together. I want to invite you to consider becoming a member of the American Rose Society. You can learn more at rose.org.
Hey, Frederick, welcome to Rose Chat.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, I am so excited to have you. You know, when we were together last fall, you just wooed the audience with the presentation on garden structures. Some of the pictures were just so amazing. And they reminded me of what many gardeners drool over. And that's pictures of what is called a cottage garden. So what is a cottage garden?
Ooh, what is a cottage garden? Well, it's certainly evolved over the centuries, to say the least. I suppose originally it started, oh gosh, back in the dark ages when people were still hunting and gathering, and somebody had the bright idea to bring the plants home with them rather than going out across the fields to collect them. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, the cottage garden really developed into pure practicality, I guess. I mean, plants were grown for food, for medicines, for keeping fleas and lice out of their beds, you know, exciting things like that, strictly practical things. And then, of course, along came eventually the 19th century, and a marvelous, the grand czarina of contemporary gardening would be Gertrude Jekyll, who almost single-handedly revised the cottage garden and really began to evolve it into what we think of now. I mean, she used to wander the lanes and so forth of Surrey, collecting plants as she went, you know, nasty little things that nobody wanted anymore, things like hollyhocks and digitalis and forget-me-nots and things like that that everybody thought was just sort of déclassé for 100 years. And suddenly, things began to evolve, and now the cottage garden has become really the quintessential English garden, from what everybody thinks of little villages with thatched cottages and vines crawling all over everything and so forth. So that's where it is now, and that's what everybody seems to want to aspire to.
Well, we just do love what Gertrude did. I mean, she was the lady to be reckoned with on all of those plants. Now, you mentioned a few of the plants, but what are the elements of a cottage garden?
Oh, gosh. I suppose really an ebullience of color and texture. And I usually, in my presentations and lectures and so forth, describe it as organized chaos. I mean, people look at English gardens and they think, oh, well, is there any structure? Is there any, I mean, it just looks like it just sort of happened. Well, that's the trick. That's the secret. And it's a little bit of this and a whole lot of that. And it's really a very romanticized kind of contemporary look at what was, we just talked about a few minutes ago. So I guess really it's areas of contemplation. It's arbors and pavilions and pergolas and everything overflowing with climbers and lots of texture, lots of color. And it's a chance to, for those of us who are plant collectors, mm-hmm. you wouldn't know anything about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a chance to really explore that and build our collections, as opposed to what one of my gardening friends over the years used to call military gardening, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but everything marching along in nice, neat rows. And that is not the English cottage garden by any way, shape, or form, so...
I read that Vita Sackville-West said that her idea of a cottage garden was a place where the plants grow in a jumble, flowering shrubs mingled with roses, herbaceous plants and climbers scrambling over hedges, seedlings coming up. And, you know, I just love the word jumble. I'm so glad mm-hmm. she used it, because I think my garden often looks like a jumble, because as a plant collector, they have to work together, because I love all of them. So I'm not going to choose just one variety.
In. Yeah, that's where the organized chaos comes in, because it is a jumble, to be sure. But just throwing things in here and there is, I mean, you'll get an effect, to say the least. But with a little bit of planning, and do you remember Felisa Crusoe, who used to be on PBS back in the 70s? She used to say, if someone gave it to you, it spreads. Well, that's... it's so true. And whether people give it to you or it just does it on its own, there are certain plants that can be thugs. They can be lovely thugs, but they mm-hmm. you do have to be ruthless, to say the least. And as you all know out there who are gardeners, that it reaches a point where enough already with the sun drops. I mean, they have to go. But, of course, that's why the gardening gods created garden clubs and plant sales. So you put the poor unsuspecting novice gardener, oh, aren't they lovely? I would love some of those. Yes, dear, they're all yours. Take them away. And in 3 years, they're cursing you and giving them to everybody else. But a lot of these cottage garden plants are so lovely that, I mean, but it does reach a point where you just have to say, okay, enough. Let's just reel this in and make room for something else.
A cottage garden needs a manager, obviously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's, you know, lots and lots of people come to visit my garden, and that's wonderful. But I'll never forget the day, nor the look on her face, which made this story even more powerful. But I had a very healthy section of primrose. It was just really taken over. And she looked at me with a very droll voice and said, who gave you those?
Just illustrates the point, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I like what you said. If someone gave it to you, well, that's probably a garden thug. It could be true. But
yeah.
Those are some of the prettiest flowers of my garden, but they do need a manager for sure.
Well, and we tend to collect plants that are emotionally soothing to us as well. I mean, certainly we all have plants that we remember from our childhood, and that is also certainly an aspect of the English country garden, too, is just surrounding yourself with the plants that you love. And if somebody else doesn't love them, well, that's their problem, not yours. So it's certainly a form of self-expression.
Well, you speaking of what you love, and as a rose lover, any garden I would ever have would have to have lots and lots of roses. So talk to us about the importance of roses in this design.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny, I was thinking that I was asked at one point, is it possible to have a proper English cottage garden without roses? And I looked at the person and I sort of raised an eyebrow and I said, well, yes, it would be, but it's a little bit like maybe having a Thanksgiving dinner with lovely china and silver flatware and linen napkins and an array of veggies, but no turkey. I mean, something would be missing. You wouldn't go hungry, to be sure. And that's sort of the way I feel about a cottage garden without roses, because they really, it sounds terrible to compare roses to turkeys, but it's sort of the turkey dinner on the table. It's, they add, well, I'm telling, I'm talking about preaching to the choir here, but roses add so much. I mean, it's the texture, it's the fragrance, and with so many different options. I mean, we all know who care about roses that there's just practically endless possibilities. But I think probably if you're really choosing roses for the English cottage garden, fortunately, they're the roses that in general take the least amount of care. I mean, climbing roses, mm-hmm. which obviously have to be massacred now and then, but the secret too of the English garden is the arbors and the climbers and that sort of thing. And climbing roses are certainly a part of the English countryside. If you drive through any village in England during rose season, and they're just festooned. They're hanging off over doorways. They're hanging off arbors and trellises and pergolas and so forth. And of course the fragrance too. And I mean, I include many roses in the garden here at my house here in Rome, which is bed and breakfast that I'm running, and brought my garden with me. I literally brought 463 pots of plants with me when I came from Massachusetts to New York.
Well, that took a while.
Well, the mover said, "You want us to move what?" And I said, "Okay, fine, whatever. You're the customer. You're the client." So I did bring many things with me, and of course, roses were among the things that came with me. Most of the ones that I have are old varieties. They are peppered here and there with a few David Austin roses, which are so like some of the old roses, mm-hmm. certainly. But to me, roses are not my passion. I like roses enormously, and they certainly are always included in gardens I design for other people as well as my own. But I want a rose that smells like a rose, mm-hmm. as opposed to, during the 50s and 60s, these roses that were bred for form and so forth are lovely. But I want to go out into the garden during rose season and smell the roses. Literally go out and smell the roses or stop and smell the roses. And that's really so much a part of the English cottage garden. And the thing is, too, that I think when you're planning this kind of a garden to remember is that these roses don't have to be segregated. In fact, it's better if they're not.
So
I mean,
true.
You go into a place like Modest Fawn Abbey, which is where the National Rose Collection is in England, and they're underplanted in the early spring with forget-me-nots, and there's columbines coming up through them and all this sort of thing. So they're not set aside in rows. Again, well, that goes back to the military gardening. Victorian rose gardens were gorgeous, there's no doubt about it, but the whole thing is the looseness of the cottage garden that makes it work. And I guess there's a word to describe the whole thing, particularly when you stir roses into the mix, it would be romance or romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties in with the jumble as well. I was lecturing to somebody and she says, "Oh," she says, "my garden is such a mess." She says, "I don't have time to weed it and there's grass here." And she goes, and I said, "Dearie, don't worry. It's not messy. It's romantic." Her face lit up and she says, "I have a romantic garden." I said, "There you go. It's permission not to weed." So, and as we're going to talk about one of my mentors, I think, in a minute, but my friend Peggy in England said, "Oh, just weed the first 12 inches. Nobody cares what's going on behind that anyway." So there you go.
Well, you just had a great lead into Peggy, a mentor to you. You know, most gardeners I know, they got their start because someone took the time to mentor them and to show them the ropes. So tell us about Peggy. She was very instrumental in your life as a gardener.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there have been certainly several, but Peggy was, it was an indomitable spirit, I think, almost more than anything, and this fearlessness. She said to me, I met her when she was probably in her early 70s, when I was living in England back in my 20s, late 20s. I'd been gardening since I was a little kid, but just sort of putzing along here and there. But this woman was amazing, and she loved her roses. There's no doubt about it. And she said the same thing. "I don't want a rose that doesn't smell like a rose." But she was in her 70s, and she gardened until she was well into her 90s. So she died, I believe she was 98 when she finally expired. But she was she was gardening pretty much right up to the end. And she didn't drive, so I used to take her out to visit some of the gardens in the area. One of them was Great Dixter, which was very close to where we used to live. And they say all is fair in love and plant rustling. This woman absolutely shocked me on more occasions. She'd always keep some secateurs in her purse or her bag, and she'd be snipping off little bits of plants and so forth in these gardens. I said, "Peggy," and she's, "Oh, no one will notice." I said, "Okay, fine." I said, "Crime doesn't always pay," but she had this incredible knack for growing things. And a lot of the roses that she did have, she'd pinched here, there, and then whatever. Or some of them were actually, she did ask permission. But this garden was, she had two houses in the ancient town of Rye, which is built on a hill. And there's not a lot of land for gardening, but she had one of the largest plots of land within the ancient walls of the town. The town was incorporated in 1289, and the walls were built about then. And so there wasn't a lot of room for expansion inside the walls. But she had this remarkable garden filled with old roses and other things, to be sure. And I got my garden fixed there, and she was great because, as I say, she kept saying to me, she said, "Oh, Frederick, I don't know anything about gardening." I said, "Peggy, you've forgotten more than most of us will ever know." But she was pretty much self-taught. And this is one thing I encourage all gardeners, is don't get hung up on the book. And Peggy was the one that said to me, one of the wisest bits of information that was ever plunked on me, was, she says, "My dear, the plants never read the book." And
That's so true.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but don't be afraid to try. So that was Peggy. She was definitely an inspiration along the way, and she, having her two gardens to work in while I was living in England, because I didn't have one of my own. I just had a courtyard behind my house that was tiny, so I had a few containers, but that was about it. But no, it was a great joy working for her. Of course, it worked both ways because she had a willing slave. So it was a win-win situation all along.
Oh, to work under a Peggy. Wouldn't that just be it? Or maybe someday we'll be the Peggy in someone else's life.
Absolutely.
So that would be special, too.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed.
Well, Fred, this has been great. But before we let you go, we have to hear another story. And that's about Sally and her rose. So tell us that story. It's a great one.
You talk about the romance of the rose. This is an amazing story. My dear friend Sally, who grew up in Minnesota and with her husband John moved to Massachusetts in 1968, I was 17, and we adopted each other instantly. Mm-hmm. And I think of all my mentors and people, certainly Sally was the grand dame, because she had a no-nonsense way of gardening, and if it didn't work, she'd haul it out and put in something else. But the story of the rose is amazing, because she was descended from the Hale family of Connecticut. Whether it's the Nathan Hale family, I'm not sure. But the story went that when the boat arrived in the 17th century with a young Hale bride and her new husband on the boat, and they settled in, I think it was Lyme, Connecticut, but a piece of a rose came with them from England. So now we're talking probably sometime around 1640, 1645, something like that. And the rose was duly planted and thrived in the new soil. And through the centuries, whenever a bride in the family was married, she was given a piece of the rose. So, of course, from England, across the sea, nurtured, it was planted, and then it began to spread across the new country. And, of course, as I said, Sally grew up in Minnesota. So at some point, the rose went west, whether it was on a Conestoga wagon or on the Erie Canal or wherever it was. It ended up in north of Minneapolis and planted in at their new house. And they never had any children, unfortunately. So when they moved to Massachusetts in a retirement mode, as it were, here's me bringing 463 pots with me from Manchester. But among that was a piece of this rose, because Sally gave me a piece of this, as I was by now really becoming quite the gardener, I guess. And I've cherished this rose. It is the most amazing rose. It smells like peppered cinnamon. And nobody's been able to identify it. But, of course, as you well know, there were so many roses that go back to antiquity that some of them aren't identified. I mean, I just call it Gibson's Damask because that was their surname. Mm-hmm. And again, as I say, I brought it with me. It's a creeper. It grows underground as well, so it pops up here, there, and everywhere. But it is such a beautiful rose. It's multi-petaled. I mean, it's definitely a damask of some sort, but nobody knows what. But I think the story is quite remarkable, and it really illustrates how important the rose is to people. Among their belongings to bring this rose with them across the ocean, and goodness knows, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks bouncing along in a leaky little nasty ship and ending up on the coast of Connecticut. So that's the story of Sally and her rose, and it is still thriving, and I give it to people when they admire it. This year, I think, will be the first year I'll be able to dig it up. It's been in the garden now here in Roma for, this will be 7 years. So now it's beginning to do its thing, so to speak.
Now, if you have an extra cutting or two, Chris and I would love to have them. I like nothing better in my garden than a story. And I feel like when I walk through my garden, the roses, a lot of the roses, they do have stories. And that makes all the difference to
me. Yes, it does. It certainly does. Well, it brings you closer to the earth in a period when people are drifting away from the land and the earth and so forth. Things like this really, excuse the expression and the pun, but it really does ground you. It gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you a sense of continuity, that this tenacious little rose managed to find itself thousands of miles from where it probably started. And who knows, it may have been brought from the Middle East during the Crusades. So it may be very well traveled. And if people say gardening is dull, they're just not paying attention.
How true is that? And you know, we're all about dispelling the myths that roses are difficult. You know, we don't want people to be afraid of roses. Roses are rich and they're easy to grow and they have these beautiful stories and they'll enrich our lives in a way that concrete never will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's fun. I mean, again, running a bed and breakfast, the house was built in 1871. It's called the Oak and Ivy, which is very much in my English heritage as well. Mm-hmm. And by bringing these plants with me and planting a garden that's appropriate for the structure, most of the plants in this garden could have been here in the 1870s when this, mm-hmm. this rather grand Italianate brick pile was put together. And so, I mean, all of your listeners out there, should you feel an overwhelming desire to come to Central New York, you might also check on, do my commercial here now, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's Oak and Ivy Bed and Breakfast. And just click on photos. And if you'd like to see a burgeoning English-style garden in Central New York, there's lots and lots of photographs. So there you are.
Well, oh, and it is beautiful. And you can follow Frederick Rice and Oak and Ivy on Facebook and get the updates and even see beautiful pictures of kitty cats that look lovingly at Frederick.
In fact, there were two of them within arm's reach here as we're speaking.
I think the Rose Chat crew needs to make a road trip to Rome, New York.
Hey, that sounds like a plan to me.
Oh, it looks lovely, Fred.
There is a rose garden in Syracuse, which is not far from us too, which is I've yet to see it, I'm ashamed to say, but that's on the bucket list for this summer too, is to go over and see that. So.
Well, it would be a delightful stay to be in this Victorian home that's so beautiful. Beautiful. Well, Fred, it's been wonderful to chat tonight. You've inspired me again.
So much great information.
I just love it. I love the stories.
Just get out there and start digging. That's all I have to say.
Absolutely. And thanks for taking the time to share with our friends.
Well, my pleasure. We must do it again sometime.
We will. Maybe we'll need to talk about those garden structures.
Sounds good.
Good night.
Thank you, Teresa. Bye-bye.
Garden friends, we do invite you to follow the Oak and Ivy Bed and Breakfast and Frederick Rice on Facebook and take a peek at his website, frederickrice.com.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.